Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, another kid who is doing incredible things, 18 years old, started a company selling refurbed 3D printers at like 12, was one of the youngest, exhibitors in the Lego world when he was like 8. So I feel like the starting of a company at 18 is sort of like a foregone conclusion. The ability to be so many steps ahead of where he's at right now, I think, was just, it's a surprise to me. It's a good conversation. I tried to give him some advice where I could, but ultimately, I was really just sort of taken aback at how thoughtful such a young entrepreneur could be. And it's to see the city developing more and more of these individuals who are self-learners, are not going to wait. They jumpstart and go. All I got to tell you is investors out there listening, like, you got to step your game up because these folks are not going to wait for you. And this is an example. Ethan, who started the company Creative 3D Technologies, basically in his room, he's working in high school 130 hour weeks. He's calculated it down to the final minute. So you listen to the podcast here and you're going to learn all about it. If you've got a son or daughter who you want to turn into an entrepreneur, that's probably not the way to put it. Steer them in the direction of, how about that? It's a podcast worth listening to, but before we do that, little startup inbox. So we've got, I can't pronounce his name. Michaela Avalos. I'm going to hope I got that right, Michaela. Startup inbox is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign. Technori is one of those 65,000 businesses. Use their marketing, sign up for activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. Here's the question. With the recent Apple TV Plus announcement, this is quite fresh, as in that happened yesterday, I was wondering your thoughts on a company entering a busy space and how do you make your company exceptional? This goes back to the Jim Collins book, Good to Great. I think it's a fascinating conversation. I don't know if we have time to answer this in its entirety, but I'll try to relate it back to Apple. They have been pushing new products and new innovations since Steve Jobs' iPod, iPad, iPhone. iTunes was sort of the glue that put it all together. If you look at the way that they looked at innovation, they looked at it in three parts. They had this sort of like what we call infrastructure, offering, and experience. And the reality is, to make your company great, it's not any harder than making it good. It's being more thoughtful, and it's understanding when the market is shifting before it shifts and before it's too late. So Apple finds out that, and whether they found it out in time or not, I don't know, but they figured out that people are kind of up against the wall at $1,000 for a phone. Like, they're not going to, I personally didn't re-up my phone, and I'm a re-upper. So I think, you know, they figured out that they're going to have to start making more money. Now, I think they knew that before they got to 1,000. My guess is that their people thought 1,000 is probably the threshold, which is why you see the iPhone SE is back on sale on the website. But they started getting into subscriptions. So now they look at it and they go, well, we've got a million plus, well, not a million, it's hundreds of millions of units in the hands of people all over the world. We've figured out how to make the most amount of money per unit, per device, as we possibly can, which is why we were rated as the most valuable company in the world for a while. Now we've got to figure out how to stretch it. We can't get people to buy more of them. We can't charge more money than 1,000. So we've hit our plateau. So the only way to do it is to get you to spend more money on it. And they are doing that right now. They got you hooked on the news app. I use it all the time. Notifications, that's where I get it. I get frustrated when I click on Chicago Tribune articles and I can't read it. They got me hooked on Apple Music. I bought a bunch of stuff on it. So now I'm not going to go anywhere else because I would lose like 900, you know, things. I've got 114 movies on iMovie. So like Apple Movie, I'm hooked. So what are they going to do? Don't worry. We're going to give you a subscription, $9 a month. And you can have your read, your news. You can have your music ad free. You can have your movies, Netflix style. You can have your games. They're going to bundle it into $49 a month, $49.99. And you're going to have access to all of this. Step back for 1 second, and I go back to the good to great. What is the difference? If you go to buy a brand new phone, and you do the Apple financing, by the way, they also have a credit card. That's a whole other thing. Thanks, Goldman Sachs. You go back to $49.99. If you went into an Apple store and you bought a $1,000 phone and you used their Barclays card in the past, you would find out that the monthly installment was roughly $49.99. So what did they do? They figured out a way to get you every single year to buy a brand new iPhone without buying a brand new iPhone. You bought the phone 2 years ago. Every month, you pay $49.99 for your subscriptions. Boom. They pay a little bit extra money for their you know, subscribers and for the producers, but otherwise, they just got everyone who has an iPhone to buy a second iPhone at the same time. That is how you have a good company and you make it a great company. You are receptive. You are thinking ahead of the plan, ahead of the market. And right as the market shifts and says, we don't want to buy another iPhone, you go, okay, cool, no problem. And you throw them a new product. I hope that answered your question. That was a little bit long-winded, but I think you get the gist. Thank you again to ActiveCampaign for sponsoring that segment. And this is my conversation with Ethan, an 18-year-old entrepreneur who is on his third venture already. You just fly, you grab on as tight as you can onto this chair, and we're going to go for a ride and see what happens. You're the second young entrepreneur to be on the show today, this week, for the persons listening. I have mentored and judged for future founders for several years, participated at all of the universities, whether it's on the Innovation Council at Marquette or the Garage at Northwestern or the Polsky Center for Chicago or DePaul or UIC. So I get to talk to a lot of young entrepreneurs, and there's like a, I have like this weird black hat, white hat thing I was talking about in the last show with Nick Hamburger from Quavos, where I want to be friendly and like help the community at large grow and develop. But I also want to do right by the founders as a, not a mentor, but as a person who can just like guide you in the right direction and sort of tell you where you need to go externally. Like, this is the things you need to know about your business. And it's a funny position to be in, because like as an investor, I'm very serious about the unit economics, the money, and what's the opportunity. But as a person who's dealt with young people who start companies, I would love to see, like Nick Hamburger as an example, like younger founders and Corbett Drummy and others before him that have an understanding and a mission that they're on, and they treat this very seriously. And it's not just like, oh, I stumbled upon a scheme that I can make money on. And they don't look at this like, and I don't mean game in a funny way, like chess. They don't look at it seriously, and they don't understand that the venture world is also another business layered on top of it. And so I really take advantage, and I also very much enjoy conversations with people like you, Ethan, because you are too young to have bias and come into this situation like not just trying to pursue a dream. And so I want to know about that dream. I want to know what you're trying to build and what your dream is. So why don't you tell us a little bit about not just the company that you're building, but like what got you to this point to want to build something?
Okay. Well, the company I have is Creative 3 Technologies, as we mentioned a few times. And we're a startup 3D printer manufacturer. So we engineer, design the printers, and produce them all in hopefully the same facility in the future.
Yep.
And what inspired me to even start this business, I guess, was frustration almost with a stagnant industry. Because if you take a step back and look at how 3D printing works in a large scale, you see a lot of similarities between the companies, especially on the higher end industrial levels. A lot of them don't make printers that directly compete with each other. Some do, but for the most part, everyone's almost in their own market segment. They'll make, for example, a large format 3D printer, a big printer that can print big objects, but it can't really handle other tasks. It will be able to print the big things, so if you want to print something minute and tiny, that same printer won't be able to handle it. And that's something I noticed across the whole industry, and partially that with other frustrations in having a printer that just couldn't be all-inclusive to handle everything that I wanted out of my own personal printing needs, since I ran 3D printer refurbishing business for about 5 years before this.
You're 18 years old. So like you're like 12 years old starting up this like refurbished 3D printing is new to maybe not 90% of the people listening to this show, mm-hmm. but like 90% of the people who know people who are listening to this show, it's a new concept. And you're like, no, 5 years ago, I started my first business where I was like refurbished 3D printer. Like, what the hell? Like, what are you doing?
It's just something I learned I quickly enjoyed. I first bought a 3D printer likely when I was around 11. Still in middle school or...
Yeah, is this like the Inventables type stuff? Have you seen like Zach Kaplan and like all of these other folks? Like, are you familiar with the maker people in Chicago?
Yes, I'm familiar with the maker community. But I initially bought it to print out little gifts and things like that for family, as I figured it'd be cheaper for me to design little gifts and print personalized things for family members. And then that printer, I ended up enjoying printing modifications for it to make it better than it initially was, and recoding it to make it faster, all sorts of different tinkering with the machine to make it better through 3D printing than I enjoyed just printing the little knickknacks. And that's kind of what got the ball rolling. I realized I can just print parts to refurbish the printers, and that's how I had the refurbishing. Then eventually it all led to the company.
So I want to ask you, as a person who is fairly well removed from high school, me being that case, not you, they had shop. And like, I guess, I don't know if they still call it that, but it was essentially wood shop, and people could like, you know, maker stuff. And it sort of got phased out and then phased back in and phased back out. I've always worried that because of that, it's also the reason that there's a lot of like you're starting to see this now, like tech, not technology like this, but like tech schools come back into place, like carpentry and electricians and things are coming back in vogue. I feel like it got lost because really like right after my graduating class of like 2002, for high school, to date me, just in case you wanted to know, I was probably like when you were being born. But it literally, there was like a 10-year period where people didn't have that. They didn't have the opportunity to get involved in things like that. When you were in school, when did you first get introduced to the concept, maybe not even of just 3D printing, but like, this is going to sound stupid, but like even Legos, like building in general, erecting things.
Wasn't introduced to it. Even in my current high school, there's not much at all in the sense of STEM programs, which I know is very different than other schools, but there's not anything in the sense of woodworking, carpentry like that.
Which is so sad. I feel like that's such a huge loss.
It's a wonderful creative outlet for people to express themselves and learn how to create different things, especially with this new wave of being able to take an idea into a physical form more rapidly than any other time in the past. It seems like something that people would find quite useful to develop that creativity sense.
So walk me through the first sort of like iteration of you deciding that not just that you love this space, but like where you realize that anything could be possible. And then I want to kind of discover that moment of like, all right, anything is possible, but I'm going to do this. And this is how I'm going to solve. Like, what's the problem you're going to solve for?
Sorry, could you elaborate?
Yeah, sure. So like when you're first looking at, you first get introduced to 3D printing, and this is before your first business where you've gotten to the refurbishment. What was the thing that drew you to it? Where you're like, this is something that I want to do. What, like you talk about, there's no STEM programs. There's no, there's no wood shop classes. Like how did you get sort of into this? How did you fall
into
in love with it?
Tech space in general.
Yeah. Almost. How did you get into the space in general?
So even before this, I was doing, like you said, Lego for quite a while. Even when I was a kid, I was the youngest exhibitor at 8 years old at the adult master builder Lego convention things. And I think that's where I got a lot of the creative sense. And I liked working with my hands, just creating different things. And as I got older, I started incorporating electronics with the things I built. And then eventually that creativity sense got shifted into computers and technology. I went online, found resources to teach myself how to code Python, C++, C and different languages. And I started working with the Arduino platform, which is great to get into electronics and robotics. And that's really immersed me into it even more and got into a specific tech sector. Then from there, that kind of transitioned to DIY custom computers that I built for friends and family, which was the prerequisite to getting the first 3D printer. Since when I bought that printer, I thought I want to just get with the times, see what all the fuss is about. And I heard a lot of great things
with times. it's so interesting to me because we talk about this with multiple founders and just people in general, business leaders, the quintessential question of are entrepreneurs, and I really don't even like using the word entrepreneurs, but like, are you built or are you made? And are you built or are you born? So I look at some of these people and I look at like their history. And to me, you're doing the same thing. If I'm going back in time to like, you're like 8 years old doing Legos. What how old were you?
I did them for quite a while before, but 8 years old would be a good age when I did the like when exhibitions.
Expeditions, yeah. So you're 8 doing this, which is essentially what you're doing now, but using the platforms of that time and the capacity that you had at that time. And mm-hmm. then you start building the computers, which is an extension of that, and the Arduino. And then you're like 12, 13, you're doing the refurbs. 18, you're like, you've got your own company in the 3D printing space. And I just, to me, it's like, I look at the last 5 years of my own career and I think, and I could even extend that back to like the last 8 years. And I'm doing vastly different things. We make money in vastly different ways, mm-hmm. but I largely am doing the exact same thing. And I look at you and I think, similarly, you're doing quote unquote different physical activities and you make money on it in a different way and different scale than you did when you were 8 years old. But largely speaking, you're doing the exact same thing as you were at 8. The passion is there and it's just driven. And I just wonder if like, is that something where could we ever find a kid and teach them and say, you're going to follow this path? Or do you think it's something where it's like you woke up, you found something you loved, and you've just continued to iterate and do it until you're done?
I don't think passion for something is something that we can teach,
yep.
or that anyone can really teach. I think the best way we can go about as a society is to introduce people to as many sectors and fields as we know of and we have available, and give them the opportunity to experience it, to learn if they love that or not. But I don't think that we can necessarily try to train someone to, this is what you should do. I mean, growing up, my parents were always very lenient, saying to almost do whatever I'd like to do and to, they're allowing me to take whatever path that I'd like to. And I end up following my own path, and that's essentially what led me here.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's actually really an even deeper conversation, because if you look at, as an example, you look at the lack of STEM, the mm-hmm. lack of opportunities in the last decade or so of us as a society pushing kids towards a college track that maybe doesn't fit for them, sort of proves your point that like we didn't let people pursue passions because we cut half of them off the list. We said, you're not going to be in arts, you're not going to be in maker, you're not going to be an engineer, you're not going to be this. And so half the people end up going down this like manufactured, pun intended, ironically, sort of space of, you're going to be a teacher, you're going to be a business person or whatever, you're going to fit in these like five boxes. And I think that opening up STEM education and reintroducing maker and reintroducing, especially because it's cheaper, so schools can't say it's too expensive now, mm-hmm. reintroducing those tools enables people to find their passion sooner and not go to school to find out who I want to be. And mm-hmm. I think you'll find a lot happier people. I think we'll find a lot more successful people. And I like conversations with people like you, because the passion and the interest is so obvious, and it was like there wasn't going to be another way.
Sure.
Like the only thing that would have been the other way is if your parents were like, no, you're not going to, like, they kicked your Legos like a meanie and they threw them mm-hmm. off the side. Like that was the only way that this wasn't going to go almost exactly where it is.
Yeah. And there's certainly been a lot of people along this road like, no, you need to do this path, go this certain way. For example, even to get to the knowledge level that I am now about what I'm doing, I essentially homebrewed my own college education. Cool. I went through a lot of the online curriculums that are out there, online resources, lectures to build up the knowledge basis in business and manufacturing engineering to learn how to design this and do it better than how other people are doing it. And there are people like, no, you should wait, you should build up your team, you should do this and this. But if you find something that you are truly passionate about, not passion in the sense that a lot of people use nowadays, where it's just a career you'd prefer
Gary
to do, other
passion
like when you just have a career you'd prefer over other ones, if you find a passion that you legitimately enjoy doing almost more than anything else that you could spend your time doing, then you should just go for it instead of trying to follow some set path, like you're mentioning with that college curriculum where you kind of expose yourself to different things at that time.
I agree. I'm not going to say that this broadly, but I will say that you are, including myself, one of five people that I've had on the show who have done what you just said, which is to manufacture their own education, literally building your own curriculum. I did the same thing. I actually went to Northwestern for graduate school and built my own curriculum out of all of the colleges that they had there, and it was quite a big problem.
Okay.
They then relaunched a degree, actually called, a master's degree, actually called the Innovation, Entrepreneurship, and Media master's degree, which is based on my transcripts. Now, had I known that I could have gone on Coursera and learned all that shit for free and not owe like $200,000 to Northwestern, I probably would have done that. Emerson Spartz from Dose Media, formerly, he's like the know-it-all Harry Potter man, also did this. He dropped out of middle school. So like that's a whole other level of like special. My own kid I mentored and now on our team, Davis, is also a self-educator. There are many more. Why I say this is, I'm not going to say that everyone listening should do this, because it's not for everyone.
Sure.
But those five people that I mentioned, myself sort of semi-included, have found a lot of success. And the two number one, like the number two, the two number one reasons, 1A and 1B, is everyone else said, don't do this, don't do that, don't wait. Because they didn't know and they didn't have the guts to find out. And you can only do yourself a favor by learning fast and failing fast and just quick. Just try it. Just go.
Exactly.
And education is not built for that. It's built to wait. Wait in line. Hiring cycle starts when you get to junior year and learning cycle. It's just like, this is such a waste of time. You can go online and build the most broad and specific at the same time education.
Yeah, that we only have the largest repositories of human knowledge ever at our fingertips, right in our pockets and our phones. So you can learn whatever you'd like to. It's easier than ever.
I'm glad to know that you had the guts to just go for it. I also want to let the world of podcast people know that I'm looking at his socks and they are an equation that looks like an architecture. What algorithm do we have written on our socks here?
We have a lot of different ones.
We have a bunch. It's like a geometry class going on right here. I see an isosceles somewhere. So I want to ask you before we let you go, the two questions. One, what was the thing that has come the easiest? And the second one I want to know is, what is the thing that has been the hardest?
Well, the harder one's a little more apparent for me at the moment, so I'll answer that one first.
Money.
Well, that, and I think the greater problem would be trying to manage the time right now, since Creative 3D Technologies, for the most part, has been a one-person show, getting all this together. And trying to manage that and still completing high school at the same time leaves me with 130 to 135 hour work weeks if we include how much work I'm doing and the schoolwork and studying that needs to go along with it.
Are you going to college after this immediately, or are you taking a minute to focus on this?
The plan is to move the business out and to focus as much as I can on this. And worst case scenario, if all fails, then I know I've given it my best shot. And then I can continue college from there while part-timing work and wait for my next venture from there. But I have a set path. I know that I enjoy this more than anything. There is no other way that I'd rather spend my time. If I had like the opportunity to travel wherever, I'd rather be doing this. Because it's fulfilling to me. And I am that deeply passionate about it. I'm enough so that I can stay up those 4 hours of sleep per night for almost the past 2 years and work those 130-hour weeks to get all this together and still have a smile on my face for the most part.
That's awesome. What is the part that has been most like obvious that was like a success that's been good? Easier than you thought?
I guess finding my path to kind of get here. It's something that I always thought of as a kid. Oh, I'm going to need to look and spend all these hours to try and find what I like to do and how I'd like to spend my time. Well, really, that was little more apparent as I kind of stumbled across it almost.
Yep.
And I took a while to step back and analyze how I want to live my life. And I guess it's a little morbid, but I looked at how I want to view my life when I'm on my deathbed.
Yeah.
You view it and you realize that you don't want to live a life of regret, and that every moment is precious and that time is limited. So you might as well make the most of every minute you have and spend it the best that you can. And I figured that doing this, because this is the most apparent thing that I enjoy, and I do enjoy more than anything else, that this is the path I'm going to venture.
You know more about life than I know at 34 at 18. I still look at time to dollars and try to figure it out, and also, you know, fit life into mm-hmm. it, right? But, you know, as you get older, it becomes harder to yes. to just keep out distractions. So I hope that you learn that time management piece. It's important. You gotta at some point figure out how to have, if you want to have that travel life or that other thing, like you, mm-hmm. you will burn out at some point unless you absolutely are just passionate about it and you're just staying into it. The only thing I could give you from an advice standpoint here that I think is worth noting is keep your focus and your, like, your personal work in the space that you love. Mm-hmm. And if you get to a position where, yeah, we won't make money or as much money, but I can hire out people to do the parts of the business that are not my passion, mm-hmm. do it. Even though it's expensive and it comes at a loss and maybe you even have to lose a little bit, always keep yourself on the part that you have the most control over and the most drive for, because that's the best way for you to manage your time. You can always get excel. Time back. Yeah, you can. You'll always, mm-hmm. you'll guarantee you excel, and that your dollar per minute will always be at its highest. Sure. But more importantly, when there are things that you want to do in your life, what's the one thing that you're most worried about? You step away from the job and everything falls apart. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, I can't do that. I can't travel on that. If you have other people lined up to take care of the other parts of the business that are not your number one, you can step away for a second and do other things.
Sure.
And always have your finger on the pulse of, like, the most important stuff. So just always keep in mind the time management thing will never go away.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a large part of the kind of next step of the company. We're moving out to Austin, Texas. And to even narrow it down, that city, I had to find where I see that I could personally have the most balance between health, things I'd like to do each week and spend my personal time, as well as where I can move and run the business out of most effectively.
And they have the best meat on a stick.
Yes, that is
so
true.
There's always that. This
many
is very
food
cool.
Trucks.
Yes, food. Oh my God, the food trucks. This is really cool. Where do people go to learn more about Creative 3 Technologies?
Well, they can look at our website, which is creative3dtechnologies.com. And we also have our Founders Edition 3D printers for pre-order on there as well.
Sweet. How much do those cost?
$8,000, while the default versions will be $8,800. You get a few extra features and additional customer customizability in terms of color and
what this gives you the ability to build, like, multiple use, unlike a lot of the other ones that are sort of like single use.
It's the most comprehensive printer out there at the moment, because I built it with that versatility in mind. Because right now, like I mentioned before, if you want to print something big, you need a big printer. If you want to print something small, you need a small yep. printer. This 3D printer is capable of handling the use cases that would typically require several printers, or if you want to produce more parts, for example, it can handle the use case that would take several printers in that scenario as well. So it's more capable of doing the jobs that usually would require other printers.
Very cool. Awesome. Ethan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Of course. You can learn more about the upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities. Check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social at Technori. You can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.